You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
Never ready for summer to end. How about you? It's been a hot one, though. I know. The heat's got my mind thinking differently when it comes to summers, but I love that summer fun. And we've had our share of it. I hope you have. But archery season for antelope is right around the corner. It just kind of blows my mind how fast it goes. But in Montana, we've got hunting season. So that helps us ease into winter a little bit, doesn't it? Also want to catch an update on the zebra mussels. Look at draining a lake, the how-to on that. We talked with Bob Gibson today from the Montana FWP on Voices.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you very much, Eric. Appreciate that. Let's get going here today on the summer ending and hunting season beginning. Now, there have been reports out there, and in fact, Eric Young, I'm reading one here that you wrote about hunting this fall could largely be shaped by the widespread drought. I kind of can't imagine that. We got to get into that a little bit. And then also an update on these AIS, aquatic invasive species, the zebra mussels. We've seen pictures, we've seen reports. The inspection stations, I think, they've been doing a good job. I hope they're doing a good job. It just seems like it. Anytime you see those pictures of, you know, we caught a boat from Wisconsin, and that's where they're really bad, is in the Midwest. And so we certainly have an eye out for out-of-state plates when it comes to those, you know, aquatic invasive species. But I want to catch an update on that. How we do? I think it's just too important not to really keep on top of that and just keep that top of mind kind of stuff. As we love our lakes, and these zebra mussels can, well, in fact, we have to drain one here. It's Lake Elmo. It's a state park. Bob Gibson is with us, FWP. He's the Communication and Education Program Manager, Region 5. We've got to talk about this stuff. Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Welcome to the end of summer.
Yes. I hang on to it as long as I can. I generally do, but this heat has got me just flummoxed. I'm not liking it at all. All those projects that you do outside, they take forever to do.
Yeah, and it's the hot weather and the wind and the fires and all that say the summer's still here, but definitely the calendar that has the hunting seasons listed on is starting to say fall's on its way.
I can't believe it. You said in a note yesterday. Just is it next week the antelope archery season gets going?
Sunday, that's only about 5 days away. The first antelope archery season opens up, and then that's always only about 2 weeks away from the opening of game bird seasons and some of the other backcountry archery seasons.
Are there any major changes? Now, we'll get to the drought kind of stuff, but I know over the summer we look at defining districts differently. We look at quotas. We just analyze a lot of data. And try to get ahead of changes to the hunting season. But what would be a couple of things that that folks may not be aware of that they ought to be?
Well, the main thing this year that we're looking at is going to be some of the access issues that are directly tied to the dry and the wind and the fire danger. Because if you're a rancher or farmer that you normally get some folks hunting on your place there, you're going to want to have your antennas up for fire danger, and so hunters, just as a common courtesy to everybody, need to be ultra aware of the fire danger this year, no driving off into the grass and flipping cigarette, but anything that could cause a fire. The other thing that we can probably look forward to this hunting season that's coming up here, at least the early part of it here, is that the biologists think that some of the distribution of animals will be a little bit different than it hasn't been in some years. They're going to be animals are going to be congregating around where they can find shelter and water and feed. And that isn't just going to be every place like it has been sometimes in the past. So hunters will have that to consider when they go out pursuing game.
How will they check on stuff? Well, access, for one thing. And I think that's a good point, because I think there's going to be a lot of landowners who have been, you know, pretty generous in the past. Of course, you know, they need that population control on some of their lands, too. So it's a symbiotic relationship. But they must be very nervous, Bob, about the fire danger, and then letting, I don't know. What's been the conversation with the landowners and the FWP about this upcoming hunting season?
Well, so far, at least in this part of the world, not very many people that are block management cooperators, or that are just folks who normally would allow hunting with permission on their place. Have said, nope, we're going to lock it up. No, not very many folks have said that. I think we may have had one block management cooperator who thought that he just wants to be a little bit more careful with fire danger. But generally, folks are saying they're going to proceed as planned, but they're going to expect hunters to be ultra cautious with fire and anything else while they're out there hunting this year. So. You know, hunters should be, just as a common courtesy to not only private landowners, but public landowners as well, ultra cautious this year with their fire.
Yeah, I have no doubt that they are. I mean, they love this land more than most, I'm going to say. How's the shape of the game?
Well, it's a mixed bag, and there's parts of the antelope population, particularly this year, that had some pretty poor fawn recruitment as a result of some of the weather last winter, and then the dryness this spring. Elk, of course, we've got elk coming out of our ears. Every place that you can have elk, there's elk. The problem with elk hunting in this part of the world, anyway, is access. Where the elk are standing around is on places where there is no hunting or very, very limited hunting, and so that's the concern. So elk we have plenty of. Mule deer, again, a mixed bag, depending on where you're at, and you can expect them to be hanging around where there's water and shelter and food for them. Then the upland game birds is generally, because of the winter and because of the winter, the upland game birds aren't doing too bad. And that's a real general statement, because there's places that are doing better than others just because of dry and water because of the drought, farmers were allowed to, and ranchers were allowed to, hay some of their CRP. CRP is there for upland game birds, obviously. And so that could be a bit of a blow to some of those upland game birds, the sharptails and pheasants and turkeys and things. But by and large, that's a good thing. Those folks have some hay, even just a little bit to put up for their cattle. The birds are going to have to find a place that's closer to water and feed.
Bob Gibson, Communication Education with the FWP Region 5. That's Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Here on Voices, I'm Tom Schultz. We want to go back to the elk then. Access becoming a bit of an issue. So we have lots of elk, but they're starting to congregate now in various areas that are protected, or... Well, is there a program to maybe disperse that? Because that is a learned behavior that's going to make hunting very difficult for most, but very specialized for some.
Yeah, in this part of the world, down in south central Montana, it's particularly a concern, because the legislature mandates that we keep the elk at a certain population level. And that's more of a social carrying capacity than it is a biological carrying capacity. But the elk have figured out where there aren't hunters, and where there's areas that they can get everything that they need, and they're congregating there. And then The access to those is quite limited in almost every instance. And so the populations continue to grow, continue to eat on those places where they're harbored or where they're protected. But that doesn't keep them in the middle of the winter from squirting out onto properties that had hunting all year long but no longer have hunting in February. And then they start munching on the hay and bumping into the pivots and eating those folks out of house and home. But so there's a concern there. Yeah, there's a number of tools available. We have some shoulder seasons where we're allowing people to kill cow elk after the normal general season is over, the Sunday after Thanksgiving. Those shoulder seasons, some of them extend clear until the 15th of February, so that as those elk get cold and start migrating a little bit, start moving around, that there's people can get on them. It also encourages those landowners that have elk on their places that are getting hammered during the winter to open that up to hunters so they can come on and kill some of those cow elk.
Do we have, and I'm just thinking about this, sort of just thinking out loud, Bob, but, you know, I often talk about our traditional Montana values and, of course, hunting and teaching your kids to hunt is a part of that. Does the FWP have some concerns, or how are they addressing this lack of maybe overall public access as some of these lands get bought up and we have maybe more and more kind of, I guess I use the word, we're specialized hunting. Is that a problem that Montanans and FWP want to address, need to address?
Oh, absolutely need to address. And access is one of the, in fact, it's the number one thing that people cite for why they quit hunting is because there's, in some instances, and that's not true everywhere, they don't hunt because they don't really can't find a place to hunt. So now those folks that want to hunt for deer and birds and various other things, and obviously goats and sheep and those kind of things that are up on the forests don't have that problem as much. But certainly the access to where the game is cited frequently by hunters who are either no longer hunting or have not started hunting. And so Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, along with its sister agencies in the other states, many other states, have got a program to recruit new hunters, to retain the ones that we have, and to reactivate those that haven't hunted for a while, that hunted for a while. And so we call it a 3R program, and it's and access is very much a piece of recruiting hunters and retaining hunters and then getting hunters back into the fold after they've left for a few years.
I got a few more questions. We'll continue on here. If you've got one, drop us a line, 866-627-5483. Pat's on the line. We'll get to Pat here in just a little bit about catch and release. And then you can always text us here, too, at 781-627-5483. If you're specifically curious about maybe a particular district or two, of course, Bob is with Region 5, Montana FWP, but also hunting regulations in general. You can give us a call and drop us a line here too. Going to look at zebra mussels here in a little bit too, and then I just think it's the science behind it must be kind of fun to actually think about it and then get out there and do it. And it's a rather dramatic and drastic step to take, but they'll be draining a lake here in Yellowstone County to prevent more spread of zebra mussels and aquatic invasive species. We'll come on back and talk more about that in a bit. Just around the corner, Sunday, the archery season for antelope. That must be quite a chore to go out there, and you must be pretty good with a bow to sneak up on antelope if you can and get within shooting range. More power to you. That starts up. We're looking at how maybe this drought has affected. There could be some potential access issues or at least questions. Extra care is going to be needed, too, as we're out there because of the dry conditions. But hunting season will get underway very shortly. We're talking about that, zebra mussels and draining a lake on a docket to Bob Gibson, Communication and Education Program Manager, Region 5, Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And I'm Tom Schultz on Voices. Bob, I appreciate you being here. Have you ever shot an antelope with a bow and arrow?
Can say that I have, and that's because I've never tried, though, too. So those folks that go out and shoot an antelope with a bow, particularly this time of year, they're pretty hardcore archery hunters.
Yeah. What do you think the closest they can get? I wonder if there's somebody out there that got even within 50 yards of an antelope for a bow and arrow hunt. Maybe it's 100. I don't know how accurate you can be with an arrow that far away.
Oh, not 100 by any means. There are some people now with some of the new high-powered bows that are trying to launch out their 60 yards. But usually the guys that are really good at it, they like to shoot them, 40 yards and in. And so getting 40 yards and in from an antelope is a pretty specialized piece of work.
Yeah, I bet they're pretty good at that, too. Pat's listening in Helena on KCAP, 950 AM. Question for Bob Gibson. Good morning, Pat.
Hi, good morning. How's everybody? I'm calling about catch and release because I'm concerned about something that was on the national news, the news this morning, concerning this subject that Bob is bringing to us again. And Mr. Lemon of the FWP mentioned that catch and release is still going on. And my opinion is that we need to think about the ethics of catching a fish, wounding that fish, putting it back in a habitat that's warmed up and may have a concentration of infectious material in it that will harm the fish. And so why are we still doing catch and release? Why can't we just cross that one off?
You mean just don't fish in those lakes or in rivers? Or if you're going to catch a fish, keep the fish?
Well, you've injured a fish and you've put it back in the water, and the water, if it's the warm water area.
So are you saying then what we need to do then is stop fishing or stop releasing?
I'm saying stop catch and release and make an announcement on that. There are, they put the hoot owl thing on. They've put on other cautions concerning our interaction with wildlife. And that one seems to be hanging on, and I don't know why.
All right, Bob. I guess I don't get, stop fishing in that area or stop releasing the fish? Bob, take it away from there.
Well, certainly, one has to consider that which is better for the fish, catching it and releasing it or catching it and killing it. And so there are places where we like folks to catch and keep their fish.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of places where people like to catch and release. Some of our hardcore blue ribbon trout streams, people like to catch and release them so that the fish are still there to catch again at a later date. And those are folks that like to fish a lot more than they like to eat fish. So we allow them to catch and release those fish. Certainly I hate to keep everything coming back to hot and dry.
But
during these hot and dry times, a lot of our streams are stressed a little bit. The Yellowstone River from Laurel all the way up to the park border is under hoot owl conditions. The Stillwater River, the lower end of it, is in hoot owl. A lot of western Montana streams are in hoot owl, which means you can't fish even during the hottest part of the day, from 2 in the afternoon until midnight, when the water is the warmest. You can't fish, catch and release or keep them. And when you can fish in the mornings, the water still is relatively warm compared to what it is, 6 months from now. So we're asking people to be very judicious about how they catch and release. Keep the fish in the water, unhook it. Most of the people that are catch and release fishing are hooking them without a barb. They've got the barb squeezed down on that fly, and so the wound is maybe less than fatal every time. So now we do have some hooking mortality.
Yeah.
Every place that you go, you're going to find some fish that were hooked and did not survive and were released, but floated anyway. And so there's going to be some of that, but certainly not as much as if Every fisherman caught kept every fish that they caught, and some of these guys are going out and that are really good and in a good stream. They may catch 15, 20, 30, 40 fish in a day. We don't want them to keep all of those fish at all. There's some places where we do catch and release specifically because we want to maintain the populations there, but we don't want to restrict the fishing. The nice thing about a couple of places in Montana is that there's places where the water comes off the bottom of a dam and it's cold. So we do have some cool water still for fishing in Montana. But by and large, this time of year, people just need to be extra careful about how they release those fish, how much they handle them. We don't want them taking them up and taking a picture and flopping around the boat and trying to get the hook out and
right.
then
yep.
turning them loose into warm water. If that was the case, that would not be good. But most of our fishermen are pretty good about treating those fish well when they're going to release them.
Yeah, Pat, thank you for that concern. I mean, she's not wrong. It's hard on the fish this time of year. But I think the real good, and maybe just take it upon yourself, if you're if you don't feel like you're really good, you still want to go fishing, catch your limit, and then go home and don't be, a danger to any more fish out there, I guess. But I think the fishermen who do catch and release on a regular basis are pretty good at releasing those fish safely. And I know we're all doing our part. Appreciate that. We'll come on back. We haven't hit zebra mussels yet and still look at Lake Elmo. And I've got more hunting stuff on my mind, too. So Bob Gibson is with us, FWP. We got headlines. Here's Brian Bennett. Talking about those that economic update series, this thing that from Dr. Pat Barkey, BBER. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to give us an update, a recession experience like no other. Oh man, how can you sum it up? Bob Gibson with us here. Pat, too, listening in Helen on KCAP. Pat, you wanted to kind of follow up on the catch and release comment, and
yes, I did.
Yeah.
I wanted to give my opinion on what this is all about. And I think what it's all about is commerce. I think that our FWP is creating commercial avenues for people who are coming in from out of state or those that live here to use our wildlife and to make money on it. And it's a special thing for those who are outfitting and those people who are being advantage to go ahead and do what they do in spite of what's happening to the warming in our state and the drying.
Yeah.
So that's all I had to say. That's my opinion, and maybe it's nobody else's, but I am not real happy with what's going on with fish, wildlife, and parks as far as the management of animals. I have another call I'm going to tell you about barbed wire and subdivisions and the old barbed wire that's up. But I'll come back on another time when you talk about that.
Okay, we'll do. Thanks,
Pat.
Thank
you very much.
I appreciate that.
For the time.
Yeah, and thanks, Pat. You're not wrong. It's about commerce, Bob. I mean, it's about a lot of things. It's not only about commerce, though. As our industry, as the recreation industry, as tourism becomes more and more a focus, of course, hunting and fishing have always been a pretty big focus. Commerce becomes a bigger consideration, I suppose, when you're trying to look at a management plan that takes all those things into consideration.
Well, you have to take commerce and guided and outfitted hunting and fishing into consideration, but we're not by any means managing the fish specifically for guides and outfitters mm-hmm. or for commerce. The biologists are managing those animals for the health of the herds and the health of the of the schools of fish and the overall and at the same time we need to take into consideration that hunting and fishing are very much a part of the heritage of this state as well as a means that we use to control the populations and to distribute the populations of wildlife particularly. So the commerce has to be taken into consideration. It is. But it certainly is not something that the biologists sit around and think about how it is that they're going to make the guides and outfitters happy.
No, it's just one of those things that one of those forks in the fire. that you have to consider. I appreciate that. Stand by. Can you stay with us? Because I want to get the chronic wasting disease. Can we do that?
I can.
All right. Bob Gibson, FWP, from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
Everywhere you're looking now, 24 fires are burning. There's two new, only one contained of that list. 329,000 acres in Montana. Please do your part there. Inflation. Now, we've kind of rolled past this topic a time or two, especially in the last several months. 5% inflation. What's that going to do? There's still a lot of economists out there that think, okay, it's really a transitory sort of thing. Some economists are going to disagree with that. What does Pat Barkey think about that? I don't know. You want to find out? They have the economic update series upcoming here. We're going to go to it's in Bozeman, it's in Helena, and it's in Billings. We're going to be down there live for the Billings one. I'm going to update you on that. But just go to the Montana Chamber of Commerce. They're going to be the organization behind this economic update series, and there's good stuff there. I'll talk about that in a bit. Good stuff from Bob Gibson as well, Communication and Education Program Manager with Region 5, FWP. Bob, I appreciate your time here. Hunting season then, right around the corner. Do you have a special access site with FWP that will maybe keep the hunters up to date on drought conditions?
Well, not drought conditions specifically,
right,
but certainly people can go on and look for the block management areas, and they can go on to the governor's fire restriction website and take a look at some of that stuff and just know where it's dry and what's available. If there's changes in any of the block management areas, the private lands that are opened up to public hunting, those will be posted on the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks website under those specific spots.
What did the hunting season tell us about CWD last year that is affecting our hunting season this year? Give us an update.
Well, CWD is kind of an odd one because it's showed up in places that wasn't really expected. And, Libby is a real hot spot. We found some down on the Beaverhead, in the Beaverhead country there of southwestern Montana. Of course, the whole CWD mess in Montana got started out of over by Bridger, and that continues to be a bit of a hot spot. So people just need to be aware that it's there, need to be aware of what they need to do to keep from accidentally spreading it after they harvest a deer.
Yeah.
And it hasn't yet shown up. I believe there was one elk that it showed up in down around Bridger someplace. But other than that, it hasn't shown up in our elk herds yet, and that's a good thing because that would even be messier than the mule deer and the whitetails that we have.
It's a disease that, as I've seen, I follow the maps, it's kind of concentrated in some areas. Those areas are not not expanded a ton. I think that's because we're pretty well aware of it. Also, I think there's some special takings going on there. The long range for CWD, there's no cure for this disease, right?
There is no cure for it. It's not like a virus or a bacteria or something that you'd be able to start working on. It's a misshapen prion in the nervous system of the animals that it affects. And it's something that nobody's been able to get around ahead of it without, yeah, drawing a line in the sand and saying that, north of this line or east of this line, we're going to make sure that there's a place where there aren't any deer to spread it, or there aren't any places or ways for the deer to spread it. And that's really the only way that people have been able to slow it down. And that's really where Montana is going with that. If you remember down in down in the country around Bridger and even over to Red Lodge and up to up toward Laurel, we had some very, very liberal seasons where we encouraged people to go in and thin those herds out a little bit, particularly those that were getting a little too thick in the hay fields and things during the winter, and to thin those out a little bit so that there was less of an opportunity for them to spread it deer to deer.
I kind of want to throw two words out there, but I'm going to run out of time. I want to throw feral hogs out there, but that's because I want to say feral hogs. But it's also an issue in Montana. Can you give us a quick update, and then we'll do the other two-letter or two-word zebra mussels?
Yeah, feral hogs, they aren't in Montana yet that we know of. They're just across the border up from northeastern Montana, and we really don't want them to come into the state. There's rules in place to keep them from getting into the state and to keep them from spreading or become ingrained in the state if they ever do get here.
Oh yeah, they're so hard to eradicate. Just a reminder then, if people are hunting this season and they encounter one, I'm sure you'll want to know about that. Let's look at zebra mussels. How have the inspection stations done? I think pretty good this year. I don't know.
Yeah, they've done their job in most instances this year. They've caught some boats that are coming in, folks that are coming to fish in Fort Peck or Flathead or other places in Montana that have got mussels. And other invasive stuff in there, and plants and things like that we really don't want spread into Montana. But zebra mussels, quagga mussels are the main thing that they're looking for as those boats come through the check stations. And, you know, while it may seem like a pain for you to go down and fish for the day on the bighorn and get caught in the check station on the way back home, that check is only one of many, many, many they do at that station. And when they catch the mussels coming in, they have done their job and saved some lake somewhere in Montana or somewhere west of the divide from getting infected with those mussels.
How do those numbers this year in terms of boats compare to last year?
Number of boats that are going through our check stations is up significantly, but then boating and recreation in general is up all over because people trying to get out and get resituated after COVID mess.
So is there a number of boats that we have? Maybe we don't have that in front of you there. Is it like 42 boats that we've stopped with zebra mussels on them or quagga mussels?
Yeah, I don't have those right in front of me here, and it's a fairly low percentage of the boats that come through that get stopped, but it only takes one to wreck a lake. I don't have the number of boats or the number of catches that they've right in front of me here.
I've just been following, you know, kind of incidentally, and it seems like we're taking it real serious. As you talked about, you know, drawing a line in the sand, if we have to do that with CWD, would you say that's what we did with these zebra mussels?
Oh, absolutely. Right at the state border, any place that we have boats that come in, we're trying to stop everything that comes in and get it inspected. Then even in the middle of the state, any boats that are crossing the Continental Divide get inspected as well, because there's no zebra mussels or quagga mussels west of the Divide.
Right.
So we don't want them jumping over into the Columbia River system by any means.
Yeah, and I guess I was referencing the effort, too. I mean, it seems like once we decided, we being the people of Montana and FWP, the agencies that represent us, decided that zebra mussels, there shall be, you know, no more in the state of Montana. FWP, I think, has taken it 100% seriously. That includes draining a lake in Lake Elmo. Are there other lakes out there that we're thinking we may have to do this? Or are you looking at this lake as sort of a test lake? What's the idea behind draining Lake Elmo, part of the state park in Yellowstone County? Because you have, I know, found some zebra mussels there, or quagga mussels.
No, the Lake Elmo is a little bit different animal there, so to speak, because it's not zebra mussels, it's Asian clams.
Oh, thank you. My fault.
That we've found in the lake here. And Asian clams are as destructive as zebra mussels, They've got a, but they're just a different animal. And we did discover them in Lake Elmo. It's the only place that they are in Montana, and that's why we want to get rid of them before they drain off into the Yellowstone or somehow else get dragged off to other waters. So that's the idea behind draining Lake Elmo. The science says that the only way to get rid of Asian clams that are entrenched in a water body is to freeze them, starve them, and dry them.
Wow.
And to do that, you drain the lake and leave it for the winter, and they're starved, drowned, frozen, and dried up.
Hey.
And that's been successful in other lakes elsewhere, so that's why we're going to do that.
In Montana?
No, not in Montana. We've done a lot of research for lakes in Nebraska and other places that Asian clams have been discovered, and that's the way that they've done it. They've done that. They've drained some lakes that are considerably bigger than Lake Elmo, but that's the only way that they've found to eradicate those clams. And so we need to do that before they get spread in Montana.
It's a dramatic step. How many acres is Lake Elmo?
I think almost about 60 acres.
60 acres. Okay. Who's getting that water, by the way?
Well,
I'll take some.
The water will go down. Lake Elmo is an irrigation reservoir.
It is.
So it's water that comes in from the Billings Bench Water Association ditch, and it goes through Lake Elmo, and then it feeds the fields that are downstream through the heights and north of Billings Heights. And so when it comes time to drain the lake, they'll open up the head gate, and those folks that live downstream from there that normally would get water out of their ditches will get that water. There'll be efforts made to make sure that as it drains, it doesn't take clams with it, obviously.
Yes.
But that water will go out onto land and irrigate land, and that's a nice thing in this dry this dry climate and this dry year. And so those clams won't make their way to downstream reservoirs or to the river.
Oh, I see. A kind of a secondary security redundancy.
And then the water that we're concerned that maybe won't be able to get everything out through the head gate, because there's some deep spots in there. So that water would be pumped back into the Billings Bench Water Association ditch, the big canal that runs through the east end of the heights, and then it would go out and get put onto fields by people that are the normal water users there.
What about the fish? And good timing for those guys, I know, but what about the fish?
Well, the fish are going to all go away. So as of right now, there are no limits, no catch limits, and we're encouraging everybody to catch and keep, catch and release there. We're going to take as many of those fish out by sportsmen and kids that are taking them home and eating them as we can. The fish that are that remain there are going to perish.
Understood. What's the toughest thing about draining a lake?
One, getting all of the water out of it is the biggie, and that may be. We hope we don't discover that there's some springs or something under it that keep feeding it. So getting the water out is going to be the big thing. What we've decided to do here in Lake Elmo is that there's a number of projects we've always wanted to do, but you can't do them, at least not do them inexpensively, with water in. So while the water is out, we're going to try to go in and if you've ever walked around Lake Elmo, that little trail that goes up right between the water and Lake Elmo Drive is rocky and rough and pretty inaccessible to anybody that it would be in a wheelchair or on crutch or anything. So we'll build some boardwalks and improve that trail. We're going to improve the dog park. We're going to put a couple of jetties that stick out into the lake and put hard surfaces on them so they're accessible for fishermen. And then we're going to build a whole bunch of fish habitat in there. Those jetties will be large rocks in the bottom so that there's spawning places for bass. Put stuff in that's good for bait fish to swim around and spawn in. Stuff for panfish. And, of course, then we'll transplant it full of catchable-sized trout for the kids again
All right.
As soon as the water gets back in there.
Quickly, how long will it take for that fishery to recover?
We'll start recovering it immediately when the water goes back in at about tax day next year, about April, mid-April, we'll start refilling it. And it'll start recovering immediately. It should be back to where it is now within a couple of years minimum.
Bob, I appreciate your expertise and your work on the land, too. Catch up with you again, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Back with more in a bit. 5.4% inflation. It wouldn't be all year long. I think that's in the last month or two. Keeping our eye on that. They're still thinking that these inflation causes and are primarily this transitory nature. Part of that is because I think the cost of inflation in the energy sector is up 24%. They anticipate that to maybe level off. So the Feds only have a couple of bullets in their belt, so to speak, a couple of things that they can use to kind of get a handle on inflation. And if it gets away from us, there's some concerns. Oh, which I don't have time to address at this moment, but we will hit those going down the road because we're going to talk here in the next few days about this economic update series and speak with some of the stakeholders in that and get a handle on that as we look ahead to that one upcoming in Billings. There's also one Thursday, August 19th in Helena. Tuesday, it's in Bozeman on the 17th in Billings here. More on that as we continue. My thanks to Bob Gibson and you for joining us. Have a good one.